is the weekend, and that means new movies are out, which means only one thing. Welcome to John Serba Hates Your Favorite Movie.
I'm very excited about this. This will be fun. Or should I not be excited about it?
I would love it if you would be excited about it. At least you'd be excited about something. So. And now, John Serba Hates Your Favorite Movie.
Good day, this is John Serba. And this is the I Hate Your Favorite Movie podcast.
Yes, it is.
I'm getting lower and lower.
I love it.
The longer this podcast goes,
you're almost
soon I will just be recording underground.
You were really, really close to Mark Hamill Joker, and now you like sound like a leprechaun of some sort.
A leprechaun?
A really angry, angry leprechaun. Like that's starring in the Justice League trailer or something.
I didn't watch the Justice League trailer.
Aquaman's really angry in it.
I didn't watch the Wonder Woman trailer.
It looked. I'll do all the spoilers for everybody else. I think it looked great.
I didn't watch the Kong Skull Island trailer.
I did not watch that one either.
I didn't. I'll just make it easy. I didn't watch any of the trailers.
I know you didn't. I'm very excited about the American Gods on Stars. I thought that looked really good.
Oh yeah, I'm a huge Neil Gaiman nerd.
Yeah,
so I'm excited for that.
I'm hoping they don't mess it up. The trailer looked great. I know you won't watch it, but the trailer looked great. So you should be
okay.
Fairly optimistic.
Have you read the book?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I'm rereading it now because I just saw the trailer.
Yeah,
I should go back and figure because it's not the world's simplest book.
No, not at all. And I've only read it once. And that's his biggest seller of all time.
Yeah,
which I think is crazy. It's his most like ambitious and
because
complicated
if
thing.
If you haven't, have you read the you've read the Graveyard Book? I'm sure. Right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Like for everyone who is back on the Jungle Book kick, you should check that book out.
The Graveyard Book, yeah, definitely. I started with this is the I Hate Your Favorite Movie
we'll
podcast.
We'll get to it.
We're
promise.
Talking
we'll
about
get,
Neil
we'll,
Gaiman.
We'll get to it.
Sandman was my entry. That's the comic book that is like the all time best comic book ever made, if you ask me. Ever.
I don't think very many people might argue with you on maybe The Watchmen, but I don't think very many people would argue with
you. Well, no, Watchmen or, you know, Dark Knight Returns and Sandman.
Yes.
That's it. That's it.
They should have just stopped.
Yeah, I know. They should have
folded up the whole medium and just walked out the door.
The walking what? anyway, yeah, I didn't watch any of the trailers coming out of Comic-Con. I have no interest in any of it. I have interest. I have no interest in the hype.
You want to approach it with fresh eyes, and I can appreciate that in certain instances.
Purity of experience.
Yes.
Join us. I will be
single-handedly trying to put the
for a not incredibly small fee. I will speak at your engagement.
The John Serba keynote on how to not watch trailers.
I'm the Tony Robbins of not watching movie trailers.
It's shorter than a TED Talk because it's about 4 minutes long. Step one: fold laptop. Step two: read book.
Exactly.
Thank you, everybody.
Anyway,
step three: see the movie when it comes out.
So we're gonna catch up with last weekend's releases. Star Trek Beyond did pretty well.
Is that number well? That just, I mean,
for this summer, it's extraordinary.
It's a feat of imagination that we got to 60 million.
So yeah, we'll get into Star Trek Beyond, and I saw an odd assemblage of films last week: Star Trek Beyond and Absolutely Fabulous: the movie, and I also saw Equals.
Wow, you were busy.
Well, I was busy seeing a broad range of odd things, but we'll start with Star Trek Beyond. And have you had a chance to see it yet?
I did not. No.
I think it's the least of the reboot alternate timeline series, whatever you want to call it, the J.J. Abrams
era.
I don't know. It's now the Justin Lin era. I think Abrams is still a producer.
He's producing on this, yeah.
Whatever that means. It just means he gets paid.
He showed up, he shook Simon Pegg's hand, and then he's gone. That's
yeah,
it.
Exactly.
Gave somebody a check, and I'm out the door.
I thought this was a lot of fun. I thought Star Trek Beyond was a lot of fun, partly because there's no colon in the title. it just That's endears the, itself yeah. to me right off the bat. There's no colon in the title. And it's just, it's almost a little freewheeling to my eye. Like, who cares? Let's just have some fun. Let's do fun things on the screen. And I know Star Trek purists are like, it's not canon, but it's 2 solid hours in the movie theater. I'm not a huge fan of Justin Lin as a director. I haven't liked any of the Fast and Furious movies, really. I know I'm kind of in the minority when it comes to that. And in fact, I think they're some of the worst things ever. But
I would argue, and I actually don't know if Justin Lin directed this, I would argue that G.I. Joe is way worse than any of those.
For sure. Well, yeah, I mean...
I'm only making the comparison because there are a lot of the same people.
Yeah.
Both of them.
Exactly. Well, you know, I don't know. I was entertained in a really awful way for G.I. Joe. I mean, All right. You know, I just would, you know, you'd drink a couple beers beforehand.
Sure. It'd
be great. It'd be a riot. But you know, he knows his way around a CGI action sequence. He's proven that in the past. You know.
Yes.
So that's good. And I saw this on IMAX 3D and all that. And the 3D, who cares as usual. His style. It's big and exciting. There's a sequence. You know, in the first third of the movie where the Enterprise crashes. And it is really one of the most, it's a remarkably fun sequence. It's a long extended sequence and they're getting shot down and attacked and there's a planet and it comes down and there's pods ejecting and Captain Kirk gets that kind of angsty moment, you know, where he's the last one because he's the captain. He doesn't go down with the ship, but he'll be the last one off because that's honor and duty. and so you have
those
that
are synonymous with Chris Pine, honor and duty.
I like Chris Pine as Captain Kirk. I really do. I think he has a lot of charisma. Zachary Quinto as Spock, same thing. You know, there's an added dimension to Spock's character in this particular franchise, this particular arm of the franchise, I should say. And they're both kind of at a point where they're questioning what they're doing. You know, Captain Kirk is like, the movie opens and there's just, you get this Groundhog Day kind of thing happening with him where, you know, he opens his closet and there's 10 of the same yellow suit hanging there. And you kind of chuckle and it's like, well, you know, he's getting a little bored. He's like, Captain's log, day 966 on a 5-year mission. Deep sigh, you know. So he's actually, you know, he's like considering a desk job. Captain Kirk is considering a desk job, and then Spock gets news that Ambassador Spock, which is him from the future, right?
Right. Yes, because what this non-canon film needed was time travel.
Well, as long as there isn't any other time travel, we can. Assert that it's on an alternate timeline from the other Star Trek.
Totally.
And therefore they can do whatever they want. Yeah, it is actually ingenious.
Yes.
I mean, it's...
As an aside, this same logic does not work with Spider-Man, so please stop.
Yeah, well, okay, we're stopping. But, like, I was just going to say, logic dictates that this won't necessarily make Star Trek... Trekkers, they're Trekkers, I believe. It's not going to make them happy, but at least they have an explanation as to why things
are different.
So, anyway, Ambassador Spock has passed away, and Zachary Quinto Spock has that moment of, I don't know what it is, because what do you do when you realize your future self who has traveled back in time to your timeline has died? What kind of existential hell is that?
Right.
It doesn't really get into that, which is kind of a good thing and a bad thing, because it's like, let's not stop and brood. Let's, you know, jump right into the action. You know, so what happens is they crash land on this planet, what with one thing and another, and Krall is the bad guy. He's played by Idris Elba. He's kind of this one-dimensional character surrounded by a bunch of ugly, faceless faces. I believe... they are Gorns, or they were Gorns in the original Star Trek series. I had a Gorn action figure when I was a kid. Because it was the coolest Star Trek action figure, because it was a monster head. It was like
right. A
man with like brown alligator head.
Yes.
He was that, those were Gorns. I don't know if Krall is I don't think they used the word Gorn in this movie unless I missed it. But so Idris Elba again, an incredibly charismatic actor. I hope he's the next James Bond. You hardly ever see his face in this movie. and he's sort of a one-dimensional character, but you know, he's this kind of evil presence, and he walks around and he's basically like, I'll show you the frontier and whatever. So he's got a few like scary lines, and is intimidating enough. He commands a fleet of these like buzzing swarm of tiny ships that just, you know, peck away at a bigger ship and just massacre it. So it is pretty scary. So of course, Kirk and Spock and Sulu and Scotty and there's a new character named Jayla, who's actually an awesome badass female figure. She's been living on the planet and she kind of helps them. Conveniently, she's been living in a crashed Federation starship. An old one.
Conveniently.
An old one. She and Scotty find each other, and of course he's the engineer. What is he going to do with it? I don't know what he could possibly do with a crashed Federation starship. Bones and Spock are paired up, and whoever is paired up with Bones is going to have an injury so Bones can heal him.
Right.
That's the way it works.
Yes.
Bones gets some corny lines, you know. I feel like my guts have been in a barn dance, and damn it, Jim. He says damn it like 19 times in this movie. I mean, I laughed at 17 of them.
Right.
You know, there's
I mean, if you're going to go in on the Bones character, you got to go all in.
It's just, 2 feet. You know, I mean, the guy is
deep
like,
end.
Is like
70,
he's like 75% catchphrase anyway, you know, at least
a good 52 is damn it, Jim, insert thing.
So, you know, So you have some comedy and some good action and just a tiny bit of angst and some suspense happening here. I was really entertained the whole time. Lin is, like I said, he's good at the big space battle stuff. He stages a good kind of climb. You know, there's two major hills in the big climactic action sequence, and he navigates those really well. It's the fisticuffs thing where it's like... at least in IMAX, I felt like I wanted to step about 10 feet back from the screen. Like I was too close. It's just this blur of action. And it's like that's when an action sequence is put together in the editing room instead of like actually filmed. It's like we need a junk shot of just a bunch of blurred colors. Let's throw that in there. And so the shot before that and the shot after that, when you put them together with the blurred thing, you can tell someone punched someone else. That's essentially what it is. So not great in those things, but those moments are fleeting. I loved Star Trek Into Darkness. I thought that was a really, really... I'm probably in the minority there, too, because I loved that movie. I really loved it. Went back, saw it again, loved it just as much. I really enjoyed the first Star Trek. Star Trek Beyond is not... quite up to par with those. I think Abrams brings more to the table. The plot gets a little holy at the end. It's not the sturdiest screenplay ever, but it's pretty funny. It's pretty entertaining. I can't tell people not to go see this movie. Especially, you know, considering the competition that's in the theater right now, which is nothing, you know, like the Neon Demon came and went and it disintegrated, and therefore now go see Star Trek Beyond.
There you have it.
Until we see Jason Bourne, maybe. I don't know. I'm not judging Jason Bourne.
And then you get the Suicide Squad after that.
Yeah, we do. We do have the Suicide Squad.
You're not fired up about that, are you?
I am cautiously optimistic. That's my other philosophy.
Is it because you saw Zack Snyder's name connected to it?
No. cautious optimism is what I approach every movie with.
Is the John Serba maxim?
Absolutely. Cautious optimism and purity of experience. You can't go into a movie sitting down saying this is going to suck. You also can't sit down in a movie going, this is going to be the greatest thing ever. Because life is about managing expectations. And I would go further, except I want to get paid for my motivational speaking.
Yeah, right. You're going to have to buy the book if you want to know.
You got to buy the book. It'll sell 16 copies. Mom will buy 10.
It's called Don't Watch That Trailer. John
Don't
Serba.
Watch That Trailer. I hate your favorite movie. Moving on. I skipped Ice Age 5.
How dare you?
Because I just...
Scene, 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 scrat.
Exactly.
Scene, scene, scrat.
Exactly.
And scene.
Exactly. So I skipped that, and I had the opportunity to see Absolutely Fabulous in the movie. Were you much of a fan of the TV series?
Not much. Not a huge fan, no. I mean, not enough that I would go see this movie.
Well, yeah. You know, and I was actually... surprised at the level of interest for people who read my review. I'm like, oh, I guess there's more people interested in seeing this than I thought. It's a dictionary definition of a cult following, at least, especially here in the States. You know, it's a BBC TV thing. I think it got aired on Comedy Central
for a while.
And it's sporadic. I mean, it existed for 20 years, but there's only... You know, there really aren't that many episodes. There's maybe 7 or 8 seasons or whatever. And Jennifer Saunders is the co-creator, and she plays Adina, one of the main characters in the film. And you're kind of like Absolutely Fabulous, the movie. Okay, sure, okay, why not? You know, let's be cautiously optimistic about this.
Let's double down on that, and we'll...
I didn't sense the demand for anyone to see this movie, and so I had no expectations, and I ended up enjoying some of it because Adina is a PR person, a PR person of the stars, and she's kind of in the twilight of her career, and she's struggling to you know, pay the bills.
So this is what our brand in crisis should have been, then.
I don't know. not necessarily struggling to pay the bills as much as she is struggling to maintain her extravagant lifestyle. And as usual, her partner in crime is Patsy, who's this kind of weird, almost amoral, blank cipher of a character who's, just kind of turns around and snorts drugs once in a while, you know, and looks in the mirror and is injecting Botox into her face, you know, like it's nothing, like it's just nothing to put a needle, a quarter of an inch from your eyeball. And so there's some, there's kind of a, you know, like a bad Santa, dirty grandpa. You root for the ugly people because they're funny, you know, they're very crass, they don't care, it's politically incorrect, it's all that. The crux of the plot is Adina wants to get Kate Moss as her client. She learns that Kate Moss's PR rep has bolted, and so she accidentally pushes Kate Moss into the Thames. And she never comes up. So Adina is wanted on at least manslaughter charges, and she has no money, and she somehow finds a way to get to Cannes, because Patsy does Patsy have old flames? She has old one night stands, and this guy they decide to just go digging for gold. That's their that is their solution to their problems. But you know, in the meantime, she has managed to, as a PR person, she has managed to draw more attention to herself than anybody else. You know, she is the subject of tabloid fodder and headlines. And part of this is pretty funny satire, of like this kind of celeb worship culture where, a nation is in mourning because Kate Moss is missing, this kind of thing, you know, and which is not to diminish the value of a human life in Kate Moss, but does a nation mourn for the loss of Superman? You know, so there's, And Kate Moss is actually in this movie, so she's in on the joke. You have to, so I can say that it's funny when a nation is in mourning for the loss of a
Superman. Yes.
So why am I stepping around these politically correct landmines? Why am I doing that? Because I probably should. Anyway, in this political environment. So, I mean, this isn't a great movie. Like, the first third of it is a bunch of, like, I guess part of the ab-fab thing was Idina and Patsy are always kind of chasing whatever is trendy. And now it seems like they've kind of fallen behind. We know how it feels. The older you get, this happens, you know? So you can kind of almost, there's a little bit, a little tiny nugget of their personalities that you can identify with, where it's like all of a sudden they're realizing maybe they're not in their prime anymore. But don't worry, that's fleeting. Any kind of self-reflection is just, it's like a couple of jokes that have a couple of layers to them, and the rest of it is Patsy, you know, dressing in drag in order to marry a woman for her money. And so you have this kind of satire brewing and just a touch of character drama, and a scene where Patsy's dowdy daughter sings at a drag club, you know, and it's just kind of a bunch of random jokes. The first third is a lot of like, let's mispronounce Twitter. Let's make a hashtag joke. It's that kind of like, isn't social media crazy kind of thing? And it's a little like, we've heard, you know, these are what are these damn kids doing?
Right.
You know, that's the subtext of that kind of thing. It's not good subtext. But it eventually gets its footing, and I think fans of this series, whoever you are, whoever you are, wherever you are, I think they're gonna see it and enjoy it. From what I understand, I've seen a couple episodes here and there. It's been a long time. It feels like it's definitely in line with the franchise. How weird is it that Absolutely Fabulous is a franchise?
Right.
Yeah.
Or that it has its own movie, really.
It has its own movie. And
likely 10 years after its prime.
Oh, easily. Easily. More like 15. I think it was the mid-90s.
Yeah. I was trying to think as you were talking, like, when was that show even on?
Yeah. I think it was the mid-90s. So, Absolutely Fabulous, the movie. If you're in, you're in. You're probably going to enjoy it. If you're not in, you're going to see Star Trek. You know what I mean? I mean, yes. There's 150 other movies out there you're going to watch. Anyway, let's move on quickly.
And now, is it time?
It's time.
And now, John Serba hates your favorite movie.
Now, if Equals is your favorite movie, and why would it be? I kind of hate your favorite movie. I really hate to say this because there are good things here. A24 is the distributor that's releasing this movie, and A24 has a great track record lately. They've released some really astounding films, everything from Under the Skin, and everything they put out has been worth watching, put it that way. If you see A24, it's like, I should probably see that movie.
Except you're going to ruin for everyone right now.
Except this is, have you ever seen a dystopian movie?
No.
What is this? In which there's like no color. It's just grays and slates and muted blues, and everybody is very clean and clean cut, and they have like barcodes embedded in their wrists. And
maybe they could be, I don't know, fighting for food for their family and or a particular sector of humanity and or trying to get through a maze, something like that?
Well, possibly. Right. This doesn't have the teen dystopian thing. It's more of like all the 1984 cliches.
Gotcha.
There's all in every movie like this, there is a PA system like on the street of whatever, you know, it's gray, urban, clean, pristine, place where carpeting is banned. You know, there is just no carpeting. There are no cotton poly blends anywhere to be seen. Everything is ironed. Like the corners of buildings, I expect them, you know, just giant irons.
Right.
Straightening the... So it kind of indulges in those cliches. The one twist is that like coupling is banned. It's a very isolationist society. And I thought, okay, well, that's a twist, but we just saw The Lobster.
I was just going to say, if we watched Lobster back to back, this would be an awesome trilogy. What would be the third part?
Well, and it's kind of the yin to Lobster's yang in some ways, because, you know, The Lobster is where you must couple or you're...
Become an animal.
Yeah, or you're exiled. And in this one, if you couple, you're brought to a place where you're going to be treated for it. It's called switched on syndrome. And I actually thought that was kind of interesting. SOS, switched on syndrome, little on the nose, like everything in this movie. So Nicholas Holt is the protagonist. He works for this company as an illustrator, and you know. There's some interesting implications there, because a company seems to be manufacturing propaganda to, you know, facilitate whatever kind of pseudo-fascist, blurry background, whatever, whoever's, you know, speaking on that PA system and that kind of robotic female voice, which is not Sigourney Weaver, which is another signifier that this movie isn't very good. And Nicholas Holt kind of trudges to work every day. You know, he gets up, he slides his box of a bed back into the wall, so it's nice and clean, and like a some kind of voice says breakfast, and it gives him a green smoothie, and he puts on his uniform, and he, you know, makes sure his hair is combed nice and neat, and he goes to work, and then he sees Kristen Stewart across the room. And nature begins to take over, which is not a good thing, you know.
It never is.
She said, you know, and I am a staunch defender of Kristen Stewart. She's been in some good movies. I loved her as Joan Jett in the Runaways film. I thought she was really good. She doesn't have like range, but she can, you know, hold a dramatic moment pretty well. And she gets a bad rap for all the Twilight movies, which, you know, make everybody look bad. They make the actors look bad. They make the directors look bad. They make the people who go see them look bad. I'm sorry. I'm supposed to not insult people, audiences of films. But, you know, this movie does her no favors, because it's sort of a one-dimensional, like, angst happening there. But everything is, all the drama is kind of tamped down. It's like, you know, you and I have had this discussion about English period pieces, where yes, everybody is very suppressed and they're afraid to express their emotions. Well, imagine if that kind of Victorian ideal is just like lording over you with like, you're going to be institutionalized and we're going to inject things into you until you stop having emotions.
So it's a weekend where all I read was Jane Austen, Huxley, and Orwell, and then I wrote a screenplay.
Yeah, kind of.
Okay.
Kind of. I mean, it definitely has that kind of Victorian vibe. So, you know, eventually Holt and Kristen Stewart will, like, what is in every futuristic 1984 dystopian story?
There has to be a revel outpouring of people starting a revolution.
Not necessarily. I mean, there's kind of an Underground Railroad thing, but co-ed bathrooms. Oh, that is what is in every future movie.
Yes,
we've dumbed down
sexuality.
They sneak into the co-ed bathrooms and, you know, get into a stall, and they mash face, they touch each other, and you kind of wonder exactly how they've been educated. And breeding is controlled by the government in this, obviously. You have to perpetuate the society and the species somehow, right? So breeding is controlled, and you kind of get drafted into the breeding program for lack of a better, well, not drafted. It's more like jury duty. It's like you get summoned. I wonder if they like give you a questionnaire and then say, "Do you know anything about what you're about to do?" And if you say no, well, then you're going to breed. What with one thing and another, things don't work out extraordinarily well. There's just not a whole lot of like anything new in Equals. That's my biggest problem with it. It's ambitious. You feel like it has something to say. A lot of movies have nothing to say. So it's hard to be overly critical, put it that way. You feel like it has something to say, but the manner in which it says it is using the same 30 words that that we use in your generic political speech, I guess. But it uses a lot of the vocabulary that we're familiar with visually, plot-wise, story-wise, character-wise, subtext-wise. It doesn't bring a whole lot new to the table. Wanted to like this movie. I like Nicholas Hoult. We know him from like Mad Max, and I think he's in X-Men, and I think he played the zombie with a conscience in Warm Bodies. He's a fairly charismatic guy. I like Kristen Stewart. Guy Pearce shows up in this. Jackie Weaver shows up in this movie as sort of like, they're not really leaders of a resistance movement as much as it's like a secret therapy session group for people who are switched on, but they're hiding it. They're hiders. And they have to do that covertly because, you know, obviously eyes, ears everywhere. Big Brother is always watching. Nothing extraordinary, nothing great, nothing new. And it's like I said, the not high drama. Everything feels kind of dulled down. It's subtle to a fault at times. As I put it when I wrote my print review, it's kind of like putting your ear to the ground trying to listen for an underwater stream. You know, it's like blah, 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 blah. That is the level of intensity that this film reaches, which is not very much. It's directed by Drake Doremus, who has some pedigree in the indie film world. He directed a film called Like Crazy, which I thought was quite extraordinary. A college age romance with Anton Yelchin, rest in peace. If you're looking for something to see, maybe look up Like Crazy. Not many people saw that. I believe it's from 2011. It's a very, very strong drama, much stronger than Equals. Thanks for listening. Tune in next week, next time, whenever we get this together again, Eric and I, when we talk about Jason Bourne. Jason Bourne is one of the movies I have to back off to be cautiously optimistic. I am very excited to see this movie. Bourne Ultimatum, one of my all-time favorite action films, has some extraordinary work in it by Paul Greengrass, the director. He is one of the best, absolutely one of the best action directors out there. Matt Damon returns. This is not the like Bourne legacy kind of crap, which didn't do a whole lot for me or much of anybody else. Sorry, Jeremy Renner. And so Jason Bourne, he is back. I'm looking forward to it. Alicia Vikander, Oscar winner, last time around, has a supporting role in it. So we're gonna watch that. We're gonna talk about Bad Moms next time. We'll see if it's any better than Bad Santa, Dirty Grandpa, or anything else that is negative adjective plural noun. If I can fit it in, we'll talk about Captain Fantastic, the new indie drama starring Viggo Mortensen. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm John Serba.